What's up, Jonathan?
Hey, Manny. This is fun.
We were just talking about the weekend.
Yeah, man.
We're going to do kind of a little different thing. It's not a TNT show. It's not a, I guess it's a TCL show, which is whatever.
Sure.
It's funny. I think it's been about going on 2 weeks now since the last time I recorded. When was the last time you recorded?
Yeah, at the same time, actually. Same time.
I think it was around the same day. Yeah, or whatever.
It was the same. We were together. I think the last show.
It was it was a nice little break, right?
Yeah.
It's like people start realizing that we need breaks sometimes.
The unofficial start of the new year, September.
Oh, the school year. Your parents.
Well, yes, and I think that you know it's unofficial in the sense that fall's happening, so changing of seasons. I for me, it's like shedding one skin and growing another, and like what's the next phase of life going to involve. So for me, I always call it the unofficial new year.
Kind of. It makes sense to do that. We have 4 more months left of this year. It's been a funny year. This show, I just want to let everybody know, we're just going to ramble on about a bunch of things that's going on, stuff that people send me. I obviously ramble on certain things on my Monday rants, and I just I look at it like there aren't enough Mondays these days for me to rant on what's going on, because it seems like there's more than one thing that's just ridiculous. When it comes to construction,
sure,
it's just there. I think when it comes to construction, they're seriously tying the hands of the small business owner operator construction, because I don't see these hands being tied on the big construction. And so as I was mentioning before we got recording, I wanted to talk a little bit about government construction.
Yeah.
I want to talk about, we have a meeting coming up with somebody that we've met recently where they're looking for some consulting on how to properly set up a big type construction company. And they've approached me, and then I brought you into the mix. So it's like, it's a great opportunity for us to go, you know what? This is what we've seen doesn't work, and this is what we would recommend that you probably start working with.
Yep.
And going from there. And I had my initial meeting with them, and I said to them, guys, listen, there's corruption in construction. I don't care how you slice it, right? There is corruption in construction where certain individuals are getting preferred treatment because of how they establish themselves. It's unfortunate. And you talk to smaller businesses, and they still talk about, you know what, though? If you can do it, then do it. Because it's advantageous. And I was like, what do you mean? So it's like you just become the villain? That's the idea? You don't try to change things? And people are like, no, you don't. You don't change things because this is about making money. And I'm like, it's unfortunate. But I'm looking forward to that, bringing you into the mix, which makes a lot of sense to do that. I definitely want to talk about some of the, I think, bullshit rules that are going on, and starting from the BC side of things, because BC is getting far more strict. I'm calling BC now California. Like, it's absolutely insane. You can't run gas anymore to any new divisions or any new construction custom homes. You can't run gas in BC.
Interesting.
So now you can't operate your house by natural gas, which is a very efficient way of doing it. And I remember back in the 80s and 90s when we were, Toronto specifically, was trying to push all electric. And we all know through history, as soon as that happened and so many homeowners did it, what did hydro do? They increased the rates. So now you want to get into, and I just want to be a little side note. So everyone knows that I still go watch movies, right? And I watched Beetlejuice over the weekend because I was just feeling nostalgic,
sure,
right?
Sure, sure, sure.
And it was entertaining. But what I was really annoyed about was the blatant product placement of a Tesla vehicle throughout the whole movie. Anytime anybody had to move from point A to point B, they had to hop into this Tesla vehicle and drive through this small town with this EV. And I swear to you, I didn't see a single charger in this entire small town. For me to think, I don't even think there was a charger in this small town in logistics, realistic point of view. So it's just like the mandate is there. Let's keep on pushing it. And I don't agree with it. I'll never agree with it. The thing is, I look at it like EVs should be an option in the marketplace. If you want to do that, great. But don't tell me that everybody should do that, because it's going to create a bigger problem. Because I think what's going to happen is you won't have the infrastructure for it. The rates are going to increase. Right now, California is talking about they've lost so much money from highway construction, which was coming from gas tax.
Sure.
And now California has 30 million EVs in that one state. Right. So you're just like going, this is insane. Like, how many, like, why is there so many EVs in this one state? But now they're not getting the money from the gas tax. So now they're contemplating taxing the EV owners. How does that make any sense? It doesn't make any sense, right? So this morning, like, because we're recording on Monday, I ranted about the Ford government talking about how they're going to put $30 million into water infrastructure in Brampton alone to help 12,900 homes. And when you calculate it, it's about 2,300 and change per house to fix water infrastructure. When I thought this was already fixed, and then someone highlighted to the fact that Brampton already put this money in there. But yet, the premier's already putting this on the landscape saying, no, no, we're going to put $30 million into this. It's part of the $1 billion that we're spending. My question is, where's all this money coming from? And who's getting these contracts? Right. Because it ain't mom and pop small construction business owners. They're not getting the contracts. But then these bigger companies are getting the contracts. And then are they really doing the work properly? Over 630 shows. The Construction Life. This show is constantly evolving. The idea is that I'm listening to the guests and I'm listening to our audience and I'm trying to figure out where else can we take the conversation. Listen, I understand. It's not always about swinging the hammer. I've told everybody since day one, TCL is 50% about swinging the hammer and TCL is 50% about the person swinging the hammer. So now we're taking it to the next level, level X. In TCL X, we invite guests to share their dark, hidden secrets of the industry without fear of reprimand. Each guest's identity will be protected with visual blurring and voice modification, allowing them to speak freely and openly. You might want to tune in to TCL X. It'll be exclusive. You'll have to find it where the real hard stories are going to be told and nothing's off limits. Because at The Construction Life, the truth matters. Book now to be a guest on the show. You can DM me through any of the social platforms. You can email me at info@theconstructionlife.com or you can text me at 416-433-5737. TCLX is coming soon. So there's a lot to talk about. Where do you want to get started, John? Like, it becomes discouraging sometimes for me.
Yeah, so why don't we start right at the top where you're talking about corruption in construction. And yes, it exists. Yes, it's present. And, you know, like, what's your thoughts on the folks who just adopt it and adapt it and say, yeah, I know it's there. It's part of the game.
Would you agree that every politician starts off with the best interest, but then once they get into the game,
yes,
they become the villain? And then the evolution of a politician, in my opinion, is they have the best ideas in the beginning. They really want to help the person out, the people out, whether you're right or left or whatever it is, blue or red, it doesn't matter. You genuinely want to help the people out, right? This is why you're getting into politics, right? But the problem is that once you get into the system and you start realizing all the cogs that are attached to the system, you're thinking, how do I change this? I can't change this. So then you basically become one of them at that point. By the time you leave, you become one of them.
You've been so beaten down and you become immune to the system. You're just like, this is how it has to work. And you find... I'm making assumptions because I've never been in politics, not yet anyhow, but I've read enough about it to learn that it becomes deflating and you have to know yourself on how much am I willing to accept before I say thank you, but no thank you, right?
I have an interesting show coming up. I spoke to a gentleman out west, BC, Mitchell, I can't remember his last name for the life of me, I'm sorry, but I think we're recording in a couple of weeks or so. It'll be a Zoom conversation. What's interesting is that he's going to run. He's run for a seat in the BC government. And we had a really amazing conversation on the phone talking about how the system's broke. It's completely broken. And we talked about what's wrong with the system, what needs to change for the system and everything like that. And he's got really good ideas. And I agree with him on a bunch of stuff that he was bringing up, probably on all of the stuff that we talked about. And so I said to him, I really want to record with you now because the election's coming up October 19th, I think it is.
Sure.
Right out in BC. This is provincial. And so, and then I said to him, I want to talk to you a month after you get. Hopefully, good luck, everything's fine, and you do get elected and you're in, right? I want to talk to you probably after you get settled in to find out what's it all really about. Because he is a contractor. He started a business, been in construction for 25 plus years, and he really wants to change things. And he brought up a lot of the restrictions that they're putting on new building, specifically in BC, right? Because they're forcing people to build a certain way, which all it does, you and I both know, increases the price of construction.
Sure.
And then we as a tradespeople get attacked on our price because we can't go back to the government and go, listen, we understand your development fees are one-third of the two-third price of building this structure. We want you to lower that. No, we're not lowering it. We're actually going to be increasing it now. So you should build it now instead of tomorrow. And that's not fair. We've watched the increase of development fees on all levels of construction continuously go up in the last 9 years. And it just, like, how do you stand on a speaker box, talk about we need more affordable housing, but yet you continuously increase the cost to produce that housing? And it's not even, there's right now, there's a CBC reporter video going around on social media talking about the many reasons why the housing pricing has gone up. And he brings up the development fees from the government side. He brings up just immigration and all this other stuff. And then he hints at labor costs have come up. But he doesn't talk about the percentage of what that labor cost is, right? He brings up the percentages on the development. He brings up the percentages on the immigration. He brings up everything else, but he doesn't bring it up. And the fact is that he can't bring it up because that number is probably about 1% or 2%. We were not allowed. We weren't even allowed during COVID to increase our labor costs. We couldn't justify it because we had to explain to our clients materials had gone through the roof. We were dealing with $110 sheet of plywood. Right, which was unheard of. Never in my life did I think about it. I was so used to a $50 sheet of plywood. So we couldn't go and turn around and go, listen, we're going to increase our labor costs too because we wouldn't get the job.
And labor costs has not increased it.
It's not a factor.
No.
It's not. When you factor everything in, material right now is still high, right? But it's not as high as it used to be. People were getting hit with lumber packages for a 3,000-4,000 square foot house that should have been $60,000, $70,000, we're turning into $150,000. That's a huge chunk of change when you're building a house and all of a sudden you got a client going, we're paying this much extra for wood when we could take that money and that can cover our appliances in our kitchen alone. But now we can't afford that. So what are they going to do? They're going to come back to the labor and they're going to ask you to reduce your labor costs.
And then the folks doing the work get hit the hardest, right? So this is interesting, right? And if you look at things that did increase that we don't have control over, things like insurance costs through the roof. What do? Nothing. You got to pay it or you're not.
How do you operate your business?
Yeah.
Without it.
Right.
You need it. Or what do? You kind of, we ain't even talking about the fly by night guys. Now you're getting the guys and everybody's a little shocked that I'm telling people to start doing mixed jobs with cash portions attached to the job.
Sure.
And I'm plainly saying, in a corrupt government society, you have every right to mix your cash jobs. Simple as that. You got a project coming up, it's $1 million. The clients are coming at you and going, listen, can we do 200 grand cash? You say yes. Simple as that.
Take the cash.
Because you're going to get the job. And then they're going to save that extra $26,000 right there alone on tax purposes. So is it illegal? 100% it's illegal. Is it illegal what the government's doing? 100% it's illegal what they're doing. So why are we being penalized and they're not?
So let's pivot back for a moment. What I'm curious on your thoughts on when we talk about government intervention, how does it shift when you talk about, I suppose, municipal level, like somebody who is in charge, MP in a smaller area like Bradford, versus Toronto versus federal government. You know, you talk about, and I wonder, here's the context. You've got the individuals who say, I want to make a difference in my community. Let's use Bradford. I want to make a difference in my community, and I'm bringing forth some great ideas, the right intentions, and they get in it. And then what?
I got a show coming up. There's been a lot of conversations on the phone. I've got a show with a woman who's been... she's an engineer by trade. She's gotten into green consulting engineering. So basically figuring out, you know, plots of land, parcels, and how to start the process and everything like that. And she's in the Barrie area. And she's completely confused on how the greenwashing, so to speak, it's no longer at the federal or provincial level. It's at the municipal level. You have communities now that are dictating that you need to start doing all this stuff. So it's not a matter of that. I think the masses in Canada, and I'm going to say the US as well too, is thinking that this is just coming in at the federal level. No, they're literally coming down right to the municipal, right into small communities, how they're getting these politicians that are just taking care of these neighborhoods, dictating to do these certain things that they say are going to save the planet. And that's why you should be doing it. So now they're imposing all this stuff. all it's doing is it's increasing the cost of construction, which we know for a fact prevents people from building.
Yeah.
So you're dismissing the purpose of trying to get affordable housing out there. Nobody's talking about, I think I mentioned it to you, about farmers markets should be included in all new communities that are built, right? We should all be contributing to each other to create a farmers market that sustains that one community, and then the next community does the same yes. thing. But we're not even doing that. Over the weekend, someone sends me a video. I think I may have shared it with you in the UAE, where you can go to a restaurant and there's a sand pit inside the restaurant, and you can remote control cranes, dump trucks, like not little dinky ones, maybe about 2 foot size vehicles. You can control all this stuff. My first thought to everybody that was sending me this thing was like, that needs to be parked into elementary schools.
Yeah.
You need to build that into an elementary school, and 1 hour of each day, you get the kids on the remotes and trying to figure out who's going to be operating the dump truck, who's going to be operating the excavator, who's going to be operating the bulldozer, anything like that, and get them so interested in construction. A home built on trust, crafted with care. Your home is more than just a structure. It's where memories are made, where your family grows, and where you find comfort. That's why your renovation or building project deserves nothing less than the utmost care and quality. Because it's not just about creating a space, it's about creating a place where life happens. Tim, the heart and soul behind Ravine View Construction, understands that your home is personal, and whether you want to be involved in every detail or prefer to leave it in the hands of a trusted expert, he and his team are here to make your vision a reality. At Ravine View Construction, every project is handled with the passion it deserves, from the initial site assessment to the final touches that turn a house into a home. Tim's team doesn't just build, they protect what matters most. With a reputation built on trust, excellence, and a commitment to using only the best materials, Ravine View Construction ensures that your home isn't just beautiful, it's built to last. Tim and his team work alongside the finest tradespeople, guiding you through every step so you always feel confident and cared for. Let them help you create a space where you can enjoy peace of mind and cherish moments with those you love for years to come. Connect with Ravine View Construction today at 416-671-0170 or visit them at www.rvchomes.ca. For direct inquiries, email Tim at info@rvchomes.ca. Let them build not just a house, but a home filled with lasting memories. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. Why don't we do that?
Can I share a personal
thought?
Sure. This actually happened, I don't know if it was Friday or Saturday, this is real, right? Christian, again, 10 years old. We're talking, and I've known oftentimes, you know, what do you want to do? What's the grown-up version of Christian look like? And he wanted to be a vet at one point in time, and now he's, I just don't want to be a plumber. And I started laughing.
That's all he said? That's the one thing he said?
So I said, okay. So what else? Well, maybe I'll be an electrician or like a general guy, right? I'm like, oh, like a general contractor, right? Yeah, and somebody who can fix things and like tinker with things. I got proud, right? Because I'm like, cool. But then I got curious and said, well, what is it that made you want to say that? Because Cassandra wasn't, she was with us and she didn't say anything. She's no interest. I said, cool, that's cool, Christian. Tell me more, like, what is it that made you come up with, I don't want to be a plumber? He's like, I just don't like getting wet. Okay, so why construction? He's like, well, because when we tinker around with stuff and, you know, I'm using the tools and I'm getting used to it. I just thought that's cool. So you say this, and I'm saying this in the sense of, it's exactly what you said. If children, I'm using Christian example, but there's many Christians of the world, if they have the opportunity to touch, feel, and screw things up along the way, like, he wants to help out, but he also wants to help out and not just, he actually said this to me. We were doing something on the weekend, preparing for the CCAN, and he's like, why am I always the guy going to run and get the measuring tape, run and go get the hammer? Right? He's like, can I just do something else? I was like, sure.
Sure, you can walk and get it.
Right? And the point is that when you involve people in it, now they have a awareness around it. Which we're not having. These conversations aren't happening in school. Hey, man, drive a dump truck. That's cool.
Well, how expensive would it be to set up a little sand pit like that and have these RCs attached? I look at that and I'm not only thinking about the construction attractiveness to the actual kids. I'm also thinking you could educate the kids on the electronic components associated with the RC components of this, right? So they can become engineers in the future talking about how to develop new toys that can become big toys on real construction sites.
Yeah, hey, folks, design and build it. And now that you've built it, they have that show, what's it called, Robot, or they build robots and you smash the robots.
Oh, Robot Wars or whatever.
Yeah, right? Same idea, right?
Yeah.
Build a machine, build an excavator, right?
But that's what it would open their minds to.
That's what it opened up to. It's like, oh, so I can either design this thing, construct it, command it, right? Or, maybe you're commanding the entire sandpit. Okay, dump truck there, bulldozer there, right? Crane over there.
I'll even go one further. You start getting the companies involved and you get them to give these classrooms mini versions of infrastructure piping.
There you go.
Cabling. So now you can not only just excavate a hole and a channel, you have to run a line. Your wastewater line. You have to run your water source lines. Like that starts opening up a bunch of stuff for kids to understand how it all works.
Talk about a joint venture, right? Like now you're going to have the Kubotas. I just pick Kubotas. Like Kubotas of the world. You guys here at Kubota provide the machines. You know, here, this company's going to provide this.
They would totally do it.
Right?
Like we've seen this. We've seen the epoxy tables where you see people do slabs of walnut and then they carve out the center and they'll throw a whole construction site inside there that's in action and then they'll embed it in the epoxy and then it's given to some big corporation as their boardroom table. And I'm like, this is what we need and that's what's going to help kids want to get into construction. Because right now, what are they doing? They're not doing anything. It's not even a conversation.
No, there's this program called STEM, which is in the schools. STEM is science, technology, engineering, mechanics. And there's some robotics built into it. There's some PLCs built into it. Not at that level. It's like build a car that you can wind up and it drives itself.
Okay, but that's cool. Not really what we're talking about.
No, we're talking like it's not dynamic. It's like it's an activity. But hang on a second. This idea is super cool because now take the same concept and inject that into a boardroom. Inject that into an organization where. Listen, this actually doesn't work, and here's why. You can see, well, if we push the dirt this way, we're not going to get the water flow, water flow management, whatever it is, right? It's not just the concepts and the engineers and the brain power behind it. Now it's like, let's get into a room this size with a sand pit and actually look at what it's like to shore this site, right?
I know, but none of this is happening. I know guys like Larry Lagamba, and he's trying to talk to parents and trying to talk to education, and he's trying to get this. And I agree with him, and I agree with a lot of people that this lost idea of connecting with kids at that age, nobody talks about it. Nobody brings it up. I haven't been into an elementary school, so I don't know what they're teaching or what they're sharing. I just see what the media is, and it's all about sex, right? They're talking about that. That's like the forefront conversation. And I'm like, that makes no sense. Why don't we just talk about education, teaching people, learning, all this other stuff? But you want more people in construction, you need to make construction attractive. For me, when I was looking at that sand pit, that was a no-brainer for me to look at it and go, as a kid, that's attractive to me. I want to know what that machine is called, what the limitations of that machine are, and why do we need all these different types of machines? What does each machine do? And then I want to start excavating and digging. And then I'm like, okay, now that I've done a hole, what do I do now with this hole? Well, you run pipe through it, or you run a foundation form so you can pour concrete. And you'll get them excited about it. And that will stick in their memory, and they'll want to learn more. Then maybe you take it to high school level, and you actually, right by the football field, you have the real machines there now.
Yeah.
And you get them to understand how it all works. You don't get them driving it right away or whatever, but you get them understanding what the joysticks all mean, what the safety is, all this other stuff. And I'm like, this is a huge possibility. Why can't we do this? And why can't the government talk to these manufacturers? Because we've got so many companies. Like right now, we've had bunch of people on the show talk about there's a huge influx of Asian influenced construction machinery equipment companies coming into North America for good reason, because the market is growing. We have the established ones, the John Deere's, the JCL's and all this other stuff. We have that. And I guess it, you know, the pros and cons associated with both of them, but there's going to be companies that are going to be more than willing to go like, listen, we will give you a unit and then we'll let you guys understand what this unit's all about. Right?
I love this, right? And I don't even know if the organization is still around, but what comes to mind is Tonka. I remember as a kid.
I still have one.
Tonka. Myself, my brother, my cousin Paul, when they lived in a subdivision house and when it was being built, we were outside, 8 years old. We have pictures of it playing in the mud with Tonka trucks. And I love Tonka because you couldn't break those things, man.
Made out of metal.
Right? You're slamming this dump truck and that's exactly what you're talking about. This is what a dump truck does. It actually moves. It actually dumps. Right? I don't know if they're still around, but there's a perfect example.
I don't know.
Touch and feel.
When you went into, at that age, what were they teaching? I don't know what they're teaching, right? So I don't know.
Yeah, I don't.
There's no construction being taught.
No, we were not taught. The only construction I learned was in, and it wasn't really construction. It was auto mechanics.
But here's the kicker, Jonathan, is that the parents, mostly men,
sure,
are going to get a kick out of it too.
Absolutely.
Because at first, they're going to have to get the remote to show their child that this is how it works. And reluctantly, they probably won't even want to give up the remote because they're going to be having so much fun where this is better than real life because there's no site super telling me what to do. I can do whatever I want and there's no risk or what have you, but I'm also having fun. Eventually, the parent will give it to the child and then they'll learn. They'll want to pick it up.
And think of, okay, so there you brought up a cool point. Now think of the machine operator who now gets to get creative. What if I can spin this little 2-foot machine this way and move the dirt this way? I'm doing this with a 2-foot machine and not a 30 or 40 foot machine, right? The risk is a lot less and you're learning and you're getting creative. Who the hell doesn't want creativity?
And at that point, you could also bring in safety.
Yeah.
If you're smart about things, you could probably have some overhead wires certain areas. And then you can start showing people, go, listen, we can't be that close to those wires. Why can't we be close to those wires? Well, here's the reason why. And then you start educating people on the safety component, right?
I have to make an assumption here that the heavy machine manufacturers must do this. Like they've got to somehow make prototypes on how much this machine can tip before it flips.
They probably have all those stats, yeah, right? For sure.
But they've got to, I have to think they make mock-ups at some point.
Well, they probably have model versions of theirs, and they probably have RC model versions of theirs.
I don't know.
But that's what I mean, is that you're not trying to reinvent the wheel. You're already approaching these companies going, give us RC models so then we can throw them in the classrooms. And this is the future generation of construction operators that are going to be coming up the pipe.
I think this is cool. Folks out there, like...
But who's actually talking about that? No, we've got politicians talking about, we're going to build X amount of homes in this amount of time. And you're like, no, you're not.
Yeah, what the hell does it even mean?
Like, you guys just keep on talking about these numbers, about how many homes. You can't build these homes when you keep on making restrictions associated with building these homes. So it brings me to my point back to BC, how BC's outline the standard Johnny-on-the-spot bathroom that we are so familiar with, right? What color are they mostly? Blue.
Sure.
Right? They're a square, right? And they basically have a tiny urinal and a tiny toilet, and that's it, right? If you're lucky, you'll have a sink. Now, they're outlawing these in BC as of October 1st. And my thought process when I was diving deep into it is like, what do you mean you're outlawing these? I don't understand. You still need toilets on the site. So they want power flush toilets, right? And I'm like, but that's the toilet that I always ordered. I ordered what we're familiar with if you go to a wedding. The larger one. That's almost the size of a shed.
You walk into.
Yeah. You walk into, it's like 5x5. I always ordered those ones because I felt those smaller ones were too cramped. I was like, this is like, first of all, you don't want to go in there and touch anything, right? Because it's just, even though they power wash and they clean and all this other stuff, I wanted the space. Plus, the larger ones, that you have to plug them up. So you can have your AC, you can have your heat during the season that you're working, but you're also having hot and cold running water.
Yep.
So that's a legal toilet. Here's a rule that BC government is implementing on construction sites. You really think the big players in the construction industry that's creating a 50-story building is going to park one of those? And by the way, everybody, it's twice the price for those larger toilets. And when you start talking about how you need to have one, what, you correct me if I'm wrong, I thought it was every other floor you're supposed to have one?
Yeah, every third floor, I believe.
Every third floor. Yeah. So you got to go up or down two floors to get to your toilet. I just assumed that you would need it on every single floor, but every third floor. So now you're going to have to be using these. There's no way the big players are going to be putting this larger, which is the legal one, because they've been using the illegal one. And I really hated the fact that when I was close to getting Monty on the show, who was at the time, you know, the Ministry of Labor for Ontario, and all of a sudden he resigns, you know, and I was trying to get him on the show because he was all about getting in front of the media cameras talking about we need proper toilets for all the women that are coming into construction. I was like, no, you need to tell the big players out there to put proper toilets on there because the small players are doing that. So yeah. The thing is, you're turning a blind eye to the big players. So what's going to happen is you're going to force small construction companies to go with the more expensive toilet. You're going to find them if they don't have them. And then when you go to a big construction site, you're going to see they have the wrong toilet on, but they're not going to get fined. They're not going to get fined because they're in bed with the construction.
There's going to be in bed with government. Well, and you know, look at the condos. The condos use those gray compartments that, you know, they hoist up with the crane. And it's just it's an open shed. You stand there and you take a leak and that's it, right? Or what's even worse is they don't. And then you get human beings being human beings, peeing where they got to pee. And then it's like, oh, stop peeing. You have a site meeting to say, oh, stop peeing. Well, if you provide the right resources, you mitigate these issues, folks.
Are they even plugging them in and giving you heat? I mean, when you start getting, I don't know what floor it is, but when you start getting to a certain height, it starts to get really cold with wind during the winter months. So no. Now you need heat in there,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And are they really plugging it in for that purpose?
No, what ends up happening is once the building is closed in with windows, then they push it back to the trades to energize one bathroom on every floor. You put a small hot water tank, heat trace the line, toilet, temporary
sink. But
until that point,
what are you dealing
you're
with?
You're peeing, you're using, you're, look at the... Look what the crane guys have to do. We don't need to talk about it here, but the crane guys...
No, the crane guys, they have a water bottle right, and a bucket, that's it, and that's what they have to right? do, right? They can't keep on coming up and down to do that. I get it. That's a harsh environment. But also, the crane guys get paid, compensated quite a bit.
Yep.
You know, they're... I'm trying to get a crane guy on the show because I want to talk to them. But they're loners, right? They like the isolation there. They're always talking to somebody on the radio, and they're taking care of their job. But they know that they're stuck in there for their shift. Your home, your legacy, built with precision, crafted with care. Your home is more than just a place to live. It's where your story unfolds, where your dreams take shape, and where your future is built. Whether you're stepping into home ownership for the first time, expanding your space for a growing family, or enhancing your property for the years ahead, your project deserves the utmost care and dedication. At Aria Build, they understand that your home is a reflection of your journey, and they're here to ensure it's crafted with precision and passion it deserves. Meet Bazad, the visionary behind Aria Build, with an unwavering commitment to excellence. Bazad and his team bring a wealth of experience and a deep understanding of what makes a house a home. Whether you want to be hands-on every step of the way or prefer to trust the process to seasoned professionals, Aria Build is your reliable partner. Dedicated to turning your vision into reality from the first blueprint to the final touch. Bazad's team isn't just about building. They're about safeguarding your investment and creating something that stands the test of time. With a solid reputation built on trust, excellence, and a commitment to working with only the best trades and materials, Aria Build delivers more than just beauty. They deliver durability and a peace of mind. Each project is a collaboration with the finest tradespeople, ensuring that every step is managed with precision, so you always feel informed, confident, and well taken care of. Choosing Aria Build means choosing a team that values what you value. Whether it's the modern aesthetic or a timeless design or a home that's built to grow with you, let them help you create a space that's not only functional, but also a sanctuary where you can build lasting memories and enjoy peace of mind for years to come. Connect with Aria Build today at 416-833-1308 or visit them at www.ariabuild.ca. For direct inquiries, email them at info@ariabuild.ca. Let them craft not just a house, but a home that reflects your life's journey. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. That's just my problem, is that you can't keep implementing all these new rules that are going to drastically affect smaller construction companies and will never affect the bigger companies, because the bigger companies are playing the game of being the villain. They go along with, I'm sorry, with influence by money. I don't need to do this because here's a lot of money, so go away, please. And that's the truth of it. That's how they make money. I've said to so many people, prove me wrong. Tell me, like, okay, in the heydays of bodybuilding, anybody grew up in my generation, Arnold Schwarzenegger was the pinnacle of, yep, of bodybuilding. Throughout my whole youth, I never thought for a second that he was taking roids, which was complete bullshit. He was always taking roids, right? So then it became a matter of, like, when you start getting to the 90s and 2000s, you started getting certain bodybuilders who came out going all natural, all natural. But they're taking a bunch of supplements. So they're increasing certain levels to get these pushes, these gains. There's no way that you can get to this size and strength without the assistance. So my argument with that, what I'm bringing that up for, is that there is no small construction company that will become a multi-million dollar construction company without becoming the villain. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. You have to bend the rules. You have to look at ways how you can get certain projects, right? Someone told me, I got a message recently. Someone told me about a project in Calgary. You'll love this, eh? A project in Calgary about builders that are building a specific condo project.
Okay.
Where there's no kitchens in the units.
Interesting.
To get around the fire restrictions on the cooking surfaces. And what they're offering in return, there's going to be a number of restaurants at the bottom where you can eat at every single day.
Okay.
Now, the condo company owns all the restaurants. They're all builders. The builders came up with this idea. You don't come up with this idea just by coming up with this idea. You come up with this idea because you've already made millions of dollars on other projects, whether they're public or private. And now you're basically going to get people to force themselves to not cook at home, which is, in my opinion, not healthy.
Oh my God.
Nobody wants to eat out every single day.
That's what's going through my mind, is like, how is this okay, folks? Because all so we're doing is
this is the messaging that they're selling. They're selling this idea. And I'm like, you don't come up with this idea because you're a regular Joe Schmo construction company. You're not making that kind of money, that infrastructure. You're not. You're a villain. You've made multi-million dollars on other projects. And now you're coming up with this project to make more millions of dollars. So this is how you become a millionaire construction contracting company.
Okay. So how do we flip the script on this, in your opinion?
Canada, in my opinion, let's go back to the playground analogy. That whole sandpit, that's Canada. Canada is such a playground for multimillionaires in construction. You've got projects, you heard about recent $150 million extension of a pathway in Toronto. A path. I think it's like a 1.5 kilometer or 3 kilometer long. $150 million. We still haven't opened up the LRT,
right?
The Eglinton Crosstown. It's $4 billion over budget. So how do you get construction companies to keep on submitting invoices saying we need additional funds for this and getting the approvals? How does that all happen? I don't understand how that happens. Like, you're doing a job for somebody. Here's the price. Oh, by the way, it's going to be an extra this, like 2-3 months down the line. Doesn't work in regular construction, but it works in public sector construction. The LRT, anybody who's working on that should be fined. The money shouldn't be going to them. The money should be taken away from them. You should have a lot more responsibility. But until that happens, which will not happen, like this year alone, Ford Greenbelt, this year alone, Ford Science Center.
Yeah.
That land was already sold before he closed it. So it's like, but then now that's not even part of the media anymore. It's just pure corruption right in front of our eyes. You try to get, I've got these other two kids that are going to come on the show who are starting, they didn't start, they already have an established sealing company, S-E-A-L, sealing. So permeable surfaces and interlocking and asphalt and they're sealing. They focused on commercial properties, industrial properties.
Cool.
And I'm like, guys, this is a really good idea. This is a really good model. I've had people who've done smaller residential ceiling companies and they're doing really well. You guys are going after that. And it was a really good conversation. And I'm looking forward to talking to these two young guys. They're in their, I think, early 30s, right? And at some point during the conversation, for some weird reason, I don't know if my corruption radar was just coming up. I was like, guys, you're treading in some really dangerous construction waters here. And then they just looked at me and they knew exactly what I was talking about. And then they just told me a story about how Never in my life, Manny, have I ever had a problem with any of my vehicles when I'm driving. I'm like, I've never in my life ever lost a wheel or lost a nut or a bolt or some shit like that. And you know where I'm going with this, right? 1 week alone, they told me about two or three of their trucks on the 401, wheels came off.
What?
You're treading in some serious construction waters now. Because you're a small company that's going into this segment of construction that's dictated by some big players, millionaires. And now they'll leave you alone when you're small, but when you start showing some growth, they'll start making some subtle threats. And that's the fact. And I just asked these kids, are you guys prepared? He goes, yeah, you know, we've got ideas. We know how to handle it. We're going after certain. And I'm like, it's going to be an interesting conversation, but that's what happens. And it's not like you sit down with your partner and you sit down with your team and you go, okay, guys, this is what it costs for a vehicle. This is what it costs for our office. This is what it costs for our material that we need. This is what it, oh, by the way, this is what it costs for threats. Construction threats are real.
Yeah.
They're scary and they're real. So any young person, there's two roads when you start getting into this landscape, how you either fight it and run the risk of having
serious
magical
issues.
Things happen,
yep.
Whether your facility goes up in flames, whether your facility gets broken into, whether tires come off, like all that kind of crap, right? Or you walk away from construction and you go, I'm not going to do this. This is too dangerous. And I think it dictates on where you are in life. If you got a family, if you're providing whatever, like it dictates on that.
And so what do you think's happening?
I think the majority of people are leaving.
I agree with you.
Because, I mean, I'll give you a scenario. Remember a few years back, a long time ago, when Nelmar Drywall Company decided to do a retirement party and they had the hooker on site?
Yes. Yep. Oh, yeah. Made the media.
Made everything. I was the only one on social media that spoke out against it. And it was a Mad at Me project. Right. And it was subcontracted to Nelmar, and Nelmar's in bed with Mad at Me, and this happens and it makes the media and it gets out. And I spoke out against it. Nobody else spoke out against it. Right. And all of a sudden, within hours of me speaking out about it, I get a lawyer letter from their lawyers. Take it down. We'll come after you. Right. And so after speaking to a number of people, and it was specifically I spoke to Carlito, he was telling me, take it down, Manny, not because the lawyer's asking you. Take it down because of the size of the drywall union is. Because all you need is one overzealous union member to go, I'm going to make an example, which means threat,
yeah.
Which means Manny's tire might get fall off, right? Manny's vehicle might get scratched. Manny's vehicle might catch on fire. Manny might happen, right? So that's why I took it down. It wasn't because the lawyers were threatening me. It was because the industry was threatening me.
This is a real conversation. Like, I lived it, and it's pretty scary, right? When the shit that you don't think is going to happen, or you never even think of, you're in construction because for so many different reasons, and of which you want to grow, you want to make a living, and
you always start with passion.
Yeah, you start with passion, and then when you get stupid shit that happens, like, I mean, you talk about tires coming off. There's also a lot worse, which you touched on, and it strikes a chord with me because it does.
It's there. It's still there today.
I know it's still there today. And it is the scariest thing. It's exactly what you're saying. It's like, it's pushing people away.
I think the younger generation today will rather walk away than try to put up a fight.
Especially compound it with, we've talked about this, the softer side of society that we have today where people just don't want the conflict. Couple of decades back, you go back and, you know, there's those incidences, those threats, and what happens? You armor up and you're like, all right, let's go. And you decide as a human being the tolerance level on which you're going to push and how far you're going to go. And for everybody, that's different. Those who have lived through the falling tires, the shit that just acts of God, they know, you know what I'm talking about. So I don't know, man.
It's not an accident.
It's not an accident.
This shit happens on purpose.
There's a book that I read that changed my perspective on everything by John Perkins, The Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And he talks about construction. He talks about the involvement of governments. And he talks about the realness of the role of an economic hitman. And it's There's folks out there, this is public knowledge, what I'm sharing this, is that there's folks out there whose their sole purpose is to put organizations out of business. So that
I believe it.
So that the government-funded, although they're not, it's not publicly noted, but the government-backed construction organizations get all the work. And this is exactly what we're talking about. So for those out there, this book was introduced to me, and it was mind-blowing. I was like, holy shit, I had no idea until I did. It all makes sense, of course. But compounding what you're saying is like, then, you know, you read this and you're like.
It's a small boys club.
Small boys club.
Right. It's a very small boys club. And and I go back to Canada being this playground where they don't want anybody else in that playground. They don't, because they want the companies that are to the right or to the left of themselves. They're in bed with them, too. They've earn the ranks to come up this way and to get all these projects public. Public is where all the money's at.
Yeah.
Public is where you can build something, it can fail, and then you could be hired to build it again. Which makes no sense, because that's not construction. That's not what's supposed to be done. Or you can build something and then it gets approved and then it gets rejected because other politicians get involved, and then the project is canceled. And then you, as a construction company, you're still compensated a percentage of the project. And then I'm being told recently that that's far and few these days, but it still happens. Build the future you dream of with Generation Construction. Your home is where life happens, where your style shines, and where your future begins. Whether it's your first home, a space for growing family, or a place all your own, you need a builder who understands your vision and brings it to life. At Generation Construction, they ensure your home is everything you've imagined. Greg, the visionary behind Generation Construction, knows that today's homeowners, they want more than just walls. They want a space that reflects who they are. At Generation Construction, they don't just build houses, they craft homes that are uniquely yours. With a reputation for excellence, trust, and a commitment to working with the best, Generation Construction offers a seamless, stress-free experience that ensures your home stands strong for years to come. Contact Generation Construction today at 705-961-5562 in the Muskoka area and 647-381-0361 in the Greater Toronto area, or visit them at www.generationconstructionltd.com. For inquiries, email Greg at greg@generationconstructionltd.com. Let's build your dream project together. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. So I don't understand why there's such this preferable treatment to these high-profile construction companies. When I start looking at numbers associated with certain big players in Canada, their numbers are in the billions. Gross revenue, what they're bringing in. Like, that's just, I don't understand that, how that works.
Okay, so crazy thought then. What's the vision of a small contractor starts a business, says, I want to grow, I want to succeed, I want to do well, starts for the right reasons. I'm curious now, does the vision change to say, well, I just want to be bought out one day by a bigger guy?
Here, I'll give you this example. Jim Carrick.
Sure.
He's working on a project and he jumped on board, and his monthly rate, I think, was like 25K per month.
Okay.
Right? So to work on this, to basically be a consultant and to oversee the construction and that, which I think is a fair value, market value for the level of experience that he brings to the table. So even if he was working on that one project for the whole year, he's making 300K for the year, right?
Sure.
And maybe he's got two or three projects on that, but now he's not going to be making 25 on all those projects. But even if he's bringing in $500,000, in our current government system right now, he's losing half of that to taxes.
Yep.
So this is where I go. It's the Nancy Pelosi effect, right? How does a construction company become a millionaire, individuals, when you're only bringing in X amount of money? So how are you becoming a millionaire? You're becoming a millionaire because there's rules set forth that dictate in your favor. And there's actually a fund. There's got to be a slush fund that, like, listen, this is no different than, you know, shaking up the neighborhood and going to the convenience store. And you want protection? This is what it's going to cost you. It's just a modern day version of it. And nobody ever highlights that. Nobody ever talks about that. Whenever you ask Ford, our premier, you know, like that Greenbelt thing came and was presented, but nobody's asking about that. That Ontario Science thing came and nobody's asking who owns that land that already owns the land of the Ontario Center. They want that. We already know that within 5 years, there's going to be 15 towers there. You make X amount of money off these towers. You know, it doesn't matter if you're giving one third of that condo price to the government. Mm-hmm. You're still making millions and millions of dollars, right? Mm-hmm. So this is just about putting up these structures. And we're going to have somebody on the show in the next little while that I'm looking really forward to, and you know, a well-educated architect who has a lot of respect for craftsmanship and the work that was done. And him and I had a conversation where we were talking about how there is no heart and soul in construction today. All the towers that are going up, I could care less. And I know that there's certain entities out there like Urban Toronto talking about this is Toronto's first whatever, the tallest structure that's being built. And you see the 3D renderings on it. It looks like shit, in my opinion. It's not a staple. All it is I see these towers like that's just feeding the $1 million machine to get that structure up there.
Yep.
And what I also see is the individual tradespeople, because you know this, you get the builder, the developer, they get the contract. They grease the wheels to get it all approved. They start digging. Then they hire a company that hires how many subcontracts underneath that? And they whittle it down after everybody's taken a piece of the fucking pie. And then the last tradesperson standing gets nothing. And barely enough to survive.
And the subtrades are squished and crushed. And it's all the risk is pushed downstream to them.
And fined when it's not done on time.
Yeah.
And then they lose money. Or they don't even get paid.
Well, don't get, and that's the thing that's not talked about either, right? How do the big guys get big?
They don't pay the little guys.
Because somebody didn't get paid along the way. And that somebody is probably no longer around. Right?
So you keep on asking me, how do we flip the script? How do we change this? Until you have like a RICO construction, you know, like you basically start arresting a bunch of people going, Ford is a criminal. I'm sorry, but politicians in these days, this is all criminal acts.
Okay. So let's pivot this then to, because you mentioned this early on too, is a political party.
A blue-collar political party.
Yeah.
You rally blue-collar tradespeople. We know there's 1.4 million tradespeople at different levels of construction. That's in Canada alone. We have a population of just under 41 million right now. We're not bringing in construction workers. We're bringing in other people that are just taking advantage of the system. Fine. You got senior citizens living in tents right now while immigrants are coming in and giving housing, mobile, cars, all kinds of food, everything, right? So that's a whole other fiasco.
Yeah.
So we have the $1.5 million tradespeople. You've got truckers. You got small business owners, owner operators. Like, I mean, you probably have this whole country is still built on small business owners. It is still built, but this whole country is run by the big players. It's built by the small players, but it's run by the big players.
So what are you talking about then? What's the vision?
You get a blue collar party. I don't know how this would work. I've joked with Jim about it. And I just said to him, I don't want my car to explode. Like, it's just like, that's, you talk about wheels coming off. The moment you try to do this, I think you're going to get attacked.
Sure.
Like you'll get threatened. I guarantee you will. Because what it does is that you're not going to be interested in taking off. You're not going to be interested in taking any payouts. You can't, right?
No. What's your interest? You're interested in grabbing the masses and rallying together in almost a, I don't know, civil overthrow, just a change of the guard. It's something different, right?
I would look at it like if you got a blue collar party, right? And you, let's just say Toronto. I would look at it like, what are all the projects that we have to build here?
Sure.
What's really important? What do we have to build here, right? We already know the infrastructure is ready there. They already made their stupid deal that all the money was going to go just into fixing the Gardner. Gardner has been a Band-Aid for the longest friggin' time, right? And so all their money for roadways is going there. I don't know if you recently have driven. I've had a couple of, two or three times now in the last couple of weeks, driven down, like downtown. It didn't bother me, I guess, when I was driving around in a work van, and I'm sure it doesn't bother people in pickup trucks, but when you drive around in a car, because I have a car, all these holes and all these deflections and all this crap here, it hits your car really hard, right? And you start to realize this is poorly maintained, but now it's not being maintained because all the money's being given to the Gardner. I would look at it like, if you run the show, what are all the projects on the table? What are the exact costs associated with each project? I would get a third-party independent consultant to verify that that project's going to cost that. Then you would do a tendering process, right? And it's going to be open to a lot more than the usual players. And then everyone tenders without any threats, which is... we're living in fantasy land, Jonathan. I'm telling you that right now. Because we know how the tendering process works in construction in Toronto, in Canada, in Ontario. We know how it works, right? It's the same faces, same players. And there's
This one's yours.
We know it. But then you open it up to other people to get into the game. And now the thing is, you as a construction company, you're on the hook for making this happen at a certain time. You have to finish this. You have to complete it. We have enough history and data to know that we should not be having unforeseen issues here. If we're excavating, we're digging holes here, we know because this project was dug. There's a whole report. We know what's underneath there.
I know, but do you think that actually... So there's a part of me, and I love this conversation because it goes back to, at the roots of it, what construction really is. Building something great. Except that when you talk about we learn from future projects, do we? Or, you know, I might challenge that and say sometimes... contractors or businesses are like, well, screw him, let him find out for himself and not share that information.
No, we need to share.
Right? And that's what's happening, though. It's like, well, let him take that project because he doesn't know that that's contaminated soil and on and on and on. Rather than disclosing that up front and saying, hey, man, not a good project to take. Right?
Well, there's the whole greenwashing crap, right? Yeah. Now you start getting into like the tree police and greenwashing crap and then the climate monitoring and all this bullshit that's not necessary, right? It's just you can't have one group of people, smaller group of people, telling the larger group of people, the masses, that you have to do it this way. And then all of a sudden they get on their jets and consume more carbon than we all do in a year's time. You can't do that. If you want to lead by example, I remember the days that Leo, you know, the actor, DiCaprio, was always showing up at award events in Priuses because he wanted to all do climate change, right? He doesn't do that anymore. He's still jet-setting around all the yachts that are six-engine diesel engine units. And then what's the carbon print there? Where's your Prius? Why aren't you driving a Tesla? Well, because that doesn't matter anymore, right? Everyone's always this greenwashing bullshit I can't stand. It's just, I think what you have to do is clean house. You have to Corleone the whole political landscape in Canada. You have to just play the opera and annihilate everybody out of there. And you have to bring in new players that are going to start from scratch. And then you have to do it properly the way it's done. And then you have to build a city that people want to come and visit. Toronto's horrendous for traffic.
That's you struck another important point. A place that people want to come and visit. How many people want to come and visit Toronto?
Nobody wants to. You got what? CN Tower.
And you've got people leaving, right?
You should be building structures here that have purpose behind them. You should be coming up with new techniques, but you should be looking globally to try to figure out what other countries are doing something similar and then get them to consult on this project. You should not be just looking in your own backyard and going, no, wrong. Like the perfect example is Bombardier. Bombardier should have been dead and buried a long time ago. Right. Their fiasco on all the new streetcars in Toronto was sickening.
Yes.
That contract should have went to someplace else. Europe is well known for their trams. 100% they know them, how to do them, how to build them, how to put them all together. But no, we wanted to still give Bombardier the contract. So we wanted to give the ugly stepchild that didn't know how to do it their contract. And then they screwed it up, cost more money, made mistakes, got them on the real world, and then they still didn't work and then had more problems. And then we all look at it like, yeah, that was fine. That was working. But it saved them money-wise because they got the contract.
Just keep bailing them out,
They shouldn't have.
Yeah.
They should not have gotten that contract, right? So now I go back to the gardener. Everyone knows that on the show. I've spoken several times. We need to do a tunnel. Tunnels are more inexpensive nowadays to do it. And all you greenwashing huggers or whatever, shut the fuck up. This needs to get done. We need to have a bypass from the west to the east and vice versa. We don't need to go through the whole core. We don't need this shit. Whenever there's an issue, like, you need to have two tunnels going on there. That's what you need to do, but nobody wants to do it. Because the way that they would tender it and the current construction system, you talk about the LRT, $4 billion over budget. that's going to be pure abuse of power. I think these companies, they look at not the opportunity to build something interesting. They look at the opportunity of how much money they can make off of it.
Yeah.
Is that how construction is when you get started? You start about the passion, about are we not fascinated by the workers, the iron workers that put structures together and that were wearing slacks and, you know what I mean, up there in the towers and putting these steel frames together because they had a lot of pride. And you had iron workers who could turn around and go, I built that tower. Nobody's saying that.
No, and you know, it's the exact opposite. It's there, but you brought up a very interesting point. What happens now, right? Traditionally, big contracts are won, and the executive team gets together and throws this big party. We won the contract. Let's go celebrate and spend thousands of dollars on this big celebratory party. Versus how does it change things when you gather the folks that are doing the work together and say, listen, folks, we've got this big I appreciate you. Here we're going and get some feedback. Like, we're going into this. What do you need? How do we do this? Nobody ever appreciates the workers doing the job. It's hot. We won this fucking contract. Go and spend money. We haven't even started. And you just spent thousands of dollars on a big champagne party to do what? To feel good?
I think also after every single project, there should be a cost analysis broken down. I want to know all the subcontractors that were on that project. I want to know the monies that were allocated for every single subcontractor. I want to know who was not paid.
Uh-huh.
I want to know all this information. Like, why do we want to know this? So then it wouldn't happen on the next one. And we want to also penalize the people who didn't, right? So I don't want people to abuse the situation where it's like, well, they're a subcontractor. They were hired to do it. They didn't get it done on time. So they were penalized for it, but they were only given a fraction of what they should have received to do it in the first place. So they couldn't bring in the proper workforce to accomplish what they needed to do. But like anybody in construction, they took the job because they were desperate. They needed the work. They could have stayed home and made more money because they would not have been in debt or lost money on this project. But I would want to know, you never talk about that. Like, you talk about the party thing. Everyone's having an excitement. Oh, look, we got the zoning. Everything's approved. We're ready to start digging, all this other shit. The suits now walk away. That's our accomplishment until we open. Until we open, and then it's the ribbon.
Yeah.
And everything's great. There's that one express, you know, and we want to thank the tradespeople.
Which is empty, meaningless.
It's complete bullshit. You should be talking about, we want to talk about the tradespeople that were fucked over. That's what we want to talk about. Experts in smart home technology. Why settle for anything less than a home technology service company that truly understands flawless Wi-Fi, unparalleled security, and immersive whole home entertainment? Andrew is the driving force behind Uplink Smart Homes. He isn't just an industry expert. He's a visionary who creates smart spaces that resonate with your lifestyle. In today's connected world, clients demand more than just speakers and routers. They want an integrated system that seamlessly blends technology with the fabric of their home. Andrew and his team are dedicated to turning your home into a hub of innovation, where every device, network, and system works in harmony to enhance your daily life. At Uplink Smart Homes, they specialize in designing and installing cutting-edge smart home systems tailored for your unique needs. From optimizing Wi-Fi coverage for flawless connectivity in every corner of your home, to implementing healthy home options like circadian rhythm lighting, their solutions are both high-tech and user-friendly. They also create whole home entertainment setups that deliver stunning audio-visual experiences, whether you're streaming your favorite shows or hosting a movie night. Andrew's approach goes beyond simply installing equipment. It's about truly understanding their clients and designing a smart home that caters to them. Contact Uplink Smart Homes today at 289-240-0600 or visit them at www.uplink.ca. For inquiries, email them at admin@uplink.ca. They guarantee that smart home technology will make your life better, but only if it's done right. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life.
Okay, crazy idea came to mind. You know how much I love people, and I'm sitting here going, there are some great people in the world, even embedded in those corporations. So, like, what the heck could a world look like where you had, this is going to sound unusual, I suppose, a committee of individuals from those big organizations who were actually in it for the right reasons that had these conversations? Does it change things? Or does it still get squashed?
I don't think it changes things, because I'll give you the Ministry of Labor.
Okay.
So we all know what the Ministry of Labor is in charge of, right? For the most part, they don't go after big construction companies. They usually only go after them if there's a death.
Yep.
They're always attacking small construction companies for all kinds of a variety of you know, issues here and there, or whatever it is, right? And so that's an organization, I think, that has been corrupted, where they turn a blind eye to certain companies and they open wide eye to smaller companies. So it's no different than the government right now. The government is not going after the wealthy for all their tax revenue. They're going after what? The middle and the lower class for all their tax revenue. So Ministry of Labor is the same thing. WSIB is the same thing.
No different, yeah.
WSIB has a $4 billion, I think, is, or it could be $5 billion by now, you know, reserve fund, right? And when you do have an accident, it's legitimate. Their mandate is to try to prove that it's not legitimate. So then they don't have to pay out. But yet that fund is funding all the admin costs associated with them. It's another corrupt organization. So it's, you can keep on coming up with these organizations, but eventually they're going to turn into a corrupt organization to benefit the industry. And you'll get threats. You start a new blue-collar organization. We're an oversight committee. We come in and we can have, call it a fucking rainbow hard hat. I don't give a shit, right? So it's like when you start seeing this rainbow hard hat, oh shit, there's a blue-collar consulting committee, right? At some point, you're going to get a knock on the door. You're going to be like, you need to stop this shit. Because we need to get this done. We're making money. Here's some money. There's going to be a wad of envelope of money. That's just how it works. Simple as that. When my first year in construction, I was dealing with a house, and all of a sudden I'm being told by somebody that that inspector took money to turn the next, you know, eye. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? And he goes, that's how it was. Bottles of booze, money left in the car. Inspectors' cars were always left unlocked. If they don't take it from you, hand exchange, no, you never received it.
They still can't.
But
do
if
that,
they
right?
come to their vehicle and there's a bottle, and it's yeah, there, they yeah. don't know how it no. got there.
They tell you you can't.
I don't know. I have no idea how it got there. My vehicle was there, and all of a sudden there's a wad of money in the seat there. How did that happen? But you don't turn around. And there's no lost and found. There's no, like, who do you give it to? Well, first of all, you asked for it without asking for it. That's the reality of construction. So you'll get the smaller young kids coming into construction. Once they discover this, they have two avenues. I keep on going back to two avenues. One, where you're going to be on this path to become exactly like them. Or two, you're eventually going to get out of this business because you can't change anything. You'll stay in your lane. You'll make your good enough money. Like same with Jim, you know, he's doing a healthy living and he's doing well. But other builders are doing well as well too. So they look at it like, yeah, sure, I'm close to being a millionaire. I'm trying to get 20 projects on the go. If I could try to make, you know, maybe $100,000 off each project, then fine, I'm bringing in $1 million and I'm doing well. But then all of a sudden they, you know, I was having a cigar with a friend and we're just sitting there and he's like, I made X amount and half of it went to the government. This is bullshit, I'm done. How can you argue with that? You can't.
It's not wrong.
I would be incredibly upset with that. So now if you do a project, it's $1 million, and then you decide half of it is going to be done in cash, you only made $500,000 there now, and now your profit on that is maybe $100,000. Now you're not paying half the taxes, and you still have the cash on the other end.
And there's something to be controlled too, right? I mean, how much we're getting closer and closer to a cashless society, man, right?
Adding more tax and adding more development fees just continues to feed an underground economy.
Yep.
And rightfully so. I have no problems with it. It should be that way. Because now you're going to do like cash, like we've learned it on the shows where you brought in Erica and talking about the fees associated with certain types of payment.
Yep.
I've watched certain types of payment increase their fees over time. They're probably going to start increasing their fees even more now because we know for a fact that credit card debt right now is at an all-time high. Nobody's ever seen it this high in history. Defaults on car loans, leases, all that shit, all time. It's all markers up high. So the insurance company makes money by not paying out. But if they keep on losing money, they're going to increase fees.
Yeah.
When was the last time you were a bad boy while you were driving your car or whatever? I can't remember the last time. but yet my fees keep on increasing. I'm a safer driver, I'm a better driver, but my insurance rates keep on going up. And their excuse is it's global. It's a blanket. It's across everybody. So you lost on some, so now you're penalizing people who don't need to be penalized.
Right.
There's another corrupted society, right? So doing a cash jobs, good on you. You're a contractor, good on you. Simple as that. Please your client, do the project. It's a smart move. You're going to survive. Start creating a nest egg for yourself. We're all talking about cashless societies right now and crypto and digital currency. It's all bullshit. All that's going to do is feed a cash underground society. That's all it's going
to
do.
Yeah. And what I'm saying by that is you go to we went to the CNE this year as a family, right? Yeah.
I haven't been there in forever.
It's been a tradition on my wife's side for a while. CNE is a carnival, folks. It's like cash everywhere. Not anymore. Games. Everything is tap. Everything is...
Really?
Yep. $10 a game and it's like tap. I was like, holy shit. I remember a toonie, a loonie.
You know why? I bet you any money there's an arrangement that was made with a certain provider that forced every single vendor there to go on this platform.
And you walk into even to the food building, it's like, we no longer accept cash. Holy shit. Right? At a carnival. Right? So to your point, what's that going to drive? It's going to be driving people to say, you got cash? Hand it over. Right? Because I don't want to be tracked and monitored. I mean, we know that it happens all the time. But not only that, the fees, the everything.
How is that no different than a shakedown in the 70s of going to the convenience store, going pay up for your protection money? Yeah. They're taking their percentage points on every single sale. They look at it like, I don't know how many people go to CNE. 100,000 people went in there and they took their 3 or 4 or 5%, whatever it was, right? And then they made that money off top of that. They just made that money because they facilitated. No, they didn't facilitate it. They forced the vendors to go this route. Meanwhile, all that cash money coming in would have went right to the person providing the service.
That's right.
So it's not fair. It's not fair at all, right? I know you keep on asking me, how do you change that? I told you right now, you got to wipe out everybody that's in this, that's already involved in this. And you have to start from scratch with a new generation of thinking. But then eventually they're going to become this way.
So is it cyclical? Does it just constantly turn and do this? I don't know.
I don't think you can change it. I think Canada has been a really nice testing ground. 41 million people. I think Ontario is such a corrupted construction society. The players are there. They're making a shitload of money. Like I've never in my mind ever thought there would be billionaires from swinging a hammer. The fact is they didn't become billionaires from swinging the hammer. They became billionaires from playing the game with the politicians and all the approvals of certain contracts, right? With money that wasn't theirs.
Yep.
With money that was printed, with money that doesn't belong. And then just for the general masses, you get politicians coming in, we're going to have to add this tax. We're going to have to add this tax. We've seen it with the current puppet mayor, Chow, in Toronto, you know, talking about a rain tax and talking about this other tax. And there's going to be more taxes that they're talking about. And I'm like, yeah, but why don't we talk about the $35,000 that you approved to put the Toronto logo on crack pipes? Why don't we talk about the drug vending machines that are in BC right now to hand out free drugs? Why don't we talk about that? No, you want to just tax regular citizens that are earning a hard living. That's a better solution. No, you get rid of all this bullshit. I think every politician should come in. First of all, you're not allowed to get any money from anybody for your political, you know, proposition that you want to become a candidate or whatever. You can't. You have to use your own funds, right? That'll never happen.
Right.
Right? So then you're not influenced now. You know, Ron Williams said it best. He goes, he thinks that every politician should have all the logos on a jacket that represent all the companies that have given them money. And then there would be a different landscape. Recently, RFK, he left a Democrat. And now he's endorsing Republican. This is RFK. Like, the Kennedy family has been a Democratic family for how many years now? He left the Democrat. Like the Democrats are not, and it's the same thing here. Liberals are not what they used to be. Lots of people I've spoken to where they're talking about how I was always a liberal. I was always voting liberal. So it's just funny that both.
Yeah, but and so you brought up something else that needs to be a little more transparent is there's a misconception that, you know, as a politician, politicians don't make a lot of money. Because that's what's illustrated.
Their Bullshit. Salary is more than the average Canadian salary.
There's and their salaries are still like, oh well, they're only, and I hate that word, but they're only making X dollars, right?
It's more than the general population, and their pension is dramatically higher than the general population.
And we're not talking about kickbacks, we're not talking about anything else, right?
We're not even disclosing that.
Everything.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it starts with full transparency and full disclosure, like you said. I love that.
But even the full transparency and disclosure, there's even stumbling blocks there because you're not even allowed to share that evidence to the public in fear of their thought processes. We cannot express the level of corruption to the mass because of the fear of confidence in our leadership.
Right.
I'm like, dude, that train's already left on tracks that were not built properly. So it's like, we already know you're corrupt. We already know you're taking this money. You should be outed because you're doing this. Yeah. There's an evolution for every politician, man. Like, they say everything they want to get in. Once they get in, they say everything to stay in. When it comes to spray foam and blown-in insulation for your next project, there's no better team than Mohammed and his crew at Foamit. With well-educated, skilled installers, Foamit doesn't just get the job done, they do it right. They take the time to properly estimate and educate you on every aspect of your project, ensuring your building envelope is airtight and energy efficient. As leaders in the industry, they bring a deep understanding of building science to every job, making sure your project stands the test of time. But don't just take their word for it. Past clients constantly praise the quality of work and professionalism of the Foamit team. From homeowners to large-scale contractors, feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, with clients appreciating their attention to detail, the thoroughness of their crew, and the results that speak for themselves. At Foamit, they pride themselves on building lasting relationships through exceptional service, reliability, and the commitment to exceeding expectations on every single project. Whether you're insulating a new build, upgrading an older property, or tackling a commercial project, Foamit is your trusted partner in achieving energy efficiency and comfort. They understand the importance of getting it right the first time, and that's why so many clients return to them for future projects. Connect with Foamit today. Reach them at 416-893-8712 or 647-961-9777. Email them at mohammed@foamit.ca or visit them at www.foamit.ca. Follow them on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and LinkedIn to see their latest projects and innovations. This message is proudly supported by The Construction Life. They'll do wrong, and then they'll say everything to stay in. Their objective is not about serving the people. It's about serving certain people and then trying to stay in.
And getting the votes.
Interesting. Then we ain't even talking about cheating. Like there's ways of cheating to get the votes, right? Which is, that's why I'm saying if you start a blue-collar party, it's just hardworking individuals, then that's how it is. I don't know how it's... I think I've never seen such a group of people that are much younger than me talking about how they want to be living in a smaller community. They want to go to the local stores and buy locally grown food and converse with people of different ages about just like regular lifestyles. They really don't want the urban. They don't want the downtown life anymore. Most young people want the downtown life for a certain portion of their maybe 20s or something like that. But once they start realizing that the numbers don't add up, they're like, there's no way we can survive here without being corrupted. So if they can figure out a way to be corrupted, which is i.e. become a politician,
mm-hmm.
then they'll stay. But for everybody else, you can sell your house in Toronto, go to Brantford, buy a mansion for that same price, or buy a smaller house and still have your nest egg for retirement.
Yeah.
And then grow your own vegetables, take care of everything there.
Yeah.
And then your kids grow up in, you know, schools and community schools, right? Where hopefully are not infiltrated. But based on what I've spoken to that woman there from Barrie, it already has. It's being implemented in small communities in Barrie, right? This greenwashing crap, right? All they keep on saying is that if we don't do this, then the climate will suffer, that the planet will suffer, all this other shit. But the moment you ask them for data to prove it, they have none.
Yeah, but
did you not grow up in the 80s and where it's like ozone layer and there's always been
don't burn plastic, don't burn styrofoam.
Yeah, there's always there, like the plastic straws bullshit. Like there's more.
Oh my God, the plastic straws and
paper straws.
The plastic straws piss me off because what? First of all, this paper straw that disintegrates in your mouth first. But so now we've eliminated plastic straws. Cool. But I go to the grocery store, everything's wrapped in plastic. One time use plastic.
You're not allowed to use plastic bags, but then you're forced to use your grocery bags, which actually cost more and have more harm.
Don't break down and everything and else.
Don't break down whatever. And then all of a sudden you're right. You purchase everything and it's all in plastic.
It's wrapped in plastic. It's shrink wrapped. It's this, it's that. It's like, so what the hell are we doing, folks?
What's like, do you not, and I still to this day, because I still have a huge collection of regular grocery plastic bags, I use them as my under the sink garbage bag. I don't spend the money on buying a specific under the sink garbage bag.
Right.
I use them, right?
Yep.
So is that not better? I don't understand how. I'm not purchasing a new item that's been created for it. I'm reusing.
Those plastic bags got reused because they got passed to everybody. Oh, take this. Here's a, you got a bag? Yeah, I do. Right here. Right? Those plastic bags.
I already told people on the show several times. I'm like, I don't care. I'm throwing all kinds of shit in my recycling bin. The government doesn't recycle.
It doesn't recycle. I agree
with you. It's been proven. They don't.
Right?
So I keep throwing shit in my recycle. I'm waiting for a sticker or something. You can't throw this out. You can't throw this out. But they're not going to do that.
They just pick up the bin and dump it.
Yeah, because it's going to landfill. Why are we, speaking of which, why are we not paying attention to Singapore, where Singapore has the best garbage situation? They burn everything in a facility that filters everything, and how they have zero garbage now, and the heat from that facility generates power. Why are we not implementing that same system here?
Florida does it. I don't know. I mean, I know Florida does
it. Why aren't we doing it here? It gives us power.
Yeah.
It cleans, it filters.
Like you put scrubbers in, you do the appropriate mechanisms to.
Why are we not putting that in there? No, because it doesn't benefit. Nobody has a contract with that person who came up with that. Nobody has a relationship, kickback. That's why it's not being done.
So, I mean, you mentioned a good places. Singapore does it efficiently by the sounds of it. They've cleaned it. They've removed whatever toxins they can remove.
All their garbage goes into this facility. They burn it. All of their garbage. They burn it. The off-gassing goes filtered through. And then the energy from the fire is used to power things. Like it's a win across the board. Those are the kinds of structures that we should be building. And you want to be as a contractor, you should be part of that. How many different trades do you need to build that facility? You need lots.
How many new ideas, right?
Yeah.
I mean, how much creativity?
Yeah.
It's not the same old shit. Oh, no, it's something totally different.
No, let's talk about how, you know, you have to make this LEED certified. LEED certified is full of shit. LEED certified means nothing other than you paid them to get that award.
Yeah, and you check the boxes. So yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right.
But my
LEED gold, my LEED platinum.
Get a third party building consultant to actually assess that building. I guarantee you it fails. It fails the standardized home. Like that's just bullshit. The LEED is a crock of shit in my opinion, right?
It's looks good in publicity.
All these politicians talking about, like, the bottom line, what I've always said is that we don't need any politicians in construction. We need a lot more construction into politicians. But they're telling us how to build things, what to do, but they've never done it. So why should we listen to them? It makes no sense. And then also the C-suite, all the executives at the top of the food chain, they, for the majority of it, they didn't come from swinging the hammer. They came from financial backgrounds, investors, people who had money to buy properties, to get approvals, people who were rubbing elbows with politicians. That's who they are.
Right.
How do you change it? I know you keep on asking how you change it. I don't think you can change it. I think you have your two options. You either become one of them or you don't.
You know, or there's a bunch of folks out there are listening who have different ideas that you and I haven't yet thought of, right? And we're open to that. Like, what's it going to take, folks? Because the way it's always been isn't the way it always has to be. And it's just starting to get pretty heavy and pretty exhausting, right?
But how do you do that, Jonathan, when it's like, okay, you still have eventually have to make money?
Of course.
Right? So everybody gets into construction that their passion, their hobby is going to perform well enough that it gives them money. It makes them money, right? But with the cost of living and how things are put together and stuff, they have to figure out how much is the amount of money that I do need. And if I keep on going down, I've said this over and over, there's a plateau. If you do things legitimately, there's a plateau. You're tapping out at a certain level. There's only so many days in the year, so many projects you can bring on. All you can really do is bring on more workforce to have more projects on the go. But you as a business owner, you're going to be stretched and you're going to have to oversee this one, this one, this one, this one. At some point, you're going to be like, I have to hire somebody else to oversee these other five and so on and so on. You can do that. And now you're juggling so many different projects. But is that making you money? We know for a fact that having more projects doesn't make you profit. You have to be smarter about how you make your profit.
Yeah.
But at some point, you're going to realize that I'm capped out. This is how much money I can only make. Is it enough for my lifestyle? I want to eventually retire. You got contractors, construction people that are not looking at retiring at 65. They want to retire a lot sooner. Whether that's they sell the business or they hand it off to somebody and then they, through a period of payments, eventually buy out the business from them. And then that's what you're using for your nest egg. But that's a challenge too as well, because we all know how much money you need to retire. And the earlier you retire, the more money you need to retire. So what do? So what? You become an influencer? You start doing some side projects? Are you lucky enough that you come up and you invent something that is affiliated with construction so then you can profit from the royalties, things like that? I don't know. A lot of people love swinging the hammer. I love swinging the hammer. Like, I do love it. But if that's all I did, you would never be financially secure.
No, you're
it's impossible.
You're doing the same thing over and over.
You're always going to be just at the cusp of surviving. And if you get into an economical situation that we are right now, we are in a landscape, economically speaking, right now. The wealthy are excited about it because they still make money from it. It doesn't affect them. But the hardworking individuals are completely nervous about it, because there's such uncertainty that they're not sure if they can survive it.
Yeah.
So what's their first thought process is that we have to downsize. We have to pull back.
Scale back.
We have to. I can't carry this site super. I have to bring it down to one site super, one project, right? That one site super has got to handle five projects. You're going to start figuring out how you tighten up your belt and figure out how do I save dollars and cents, right? That's the only way you can do it. Because money is not coming in. You're not getting more projects. And the projects that you are getting are being affected by all the new rules, which are costing more money, which means you have to go back to the clients and go, listen, by the way, this was, when we first got talking, $1.2 million to build. But now, as a result, we're submitting our application. There's new government rules regarding this energy efficiency crap and this energy efficiency crap. Right? Like 2030 is going to be a really scary time to be in construction. The greenwashing that this current government is talking about doing, enforcing, that's what they're doing. They're forcing the construction company to build this way. And all we can do is go to the clients. By the way, it's going to cost you 20, 30, 40% more because we have to go triple paint. We have to go double wall. We have to go this and we have to go that. And the clients are going to say, well, we're going to put this project on hold. We can't build it. And then what are you as a contractor? You're going to like, what, take a discount? No, then you're not making money. You have to look at your own balance sheet. This project was going to give me X amount of dollars, right? This is my profit margin. It would be great to have a 25% profit margin. No, that's not the case these days. You're dealing with less than 10 profit. That's realistic. So that's regular construction. And it's none of that is applicable to public sector construction.
Right.
Public sector is like casino. They just love it. There's just so much money there. So they get into that. Then you try to get into that. You can't because of threats. That's how scary shit is, right? So I think the majority of people leave. They're like, I like my life too much. I like my family too much. I don't want to be killed. And I can't play in the sandbox. So I get the fuck out.
And that could be even physically, like, pick up and leave, like, go somewhere else.
Because nobody talks about all the people that are leaving.
Right.
I know so many people that have left construction, become sales reps. And I look at them and I'm like, smart move. I get it. We're all entrepreneurs. I understand this. Right. You want to build something. I get it. But at some point you have to decide, how much do I want to build? Right.
Where do I want to live? I just spoke to a gentleman last week, you know, been with an organization, electrical, for 20 years, goes on vacation to Portugal for 5 weeks, comes back and no longer has a job.
They just terminated him?
Mm-hmm.
Because what, he was gone for 5 weeks, or they just...
I'm not sure he'll ever get the real information. He got a phone call from HR and said, come and pick up your stuff, right? And he's like, actually, no, you're going to come pick up the computer and the phone and whatever else. And that's a whole different point of view. The point was, you know, I asked him, like, could you live in Portugal? He's like, it was a heck yeah. Instantaneous, like, all right, so what would you do? He's like, I do electrical. But it was very different. Right? He's like, I when I was there, I looked at construction. He was there 5 weeks, and he was there embedded in, not as a tourist, right? He has a place there, and he talked about the difference of construction, the different mindset. Safety was very different. And so you bring up this point, and I just, my brain goes to how many people physically, and I'm not saying Portugal or anywhere else in the world is the place to be. I'm saying how many people actually think of that. And I asked him straight out, you know, have you thought about relocating? He goes, absolutely have. Would you? He says, not right now. My wife's not there yet. They have four kids. So to your point, like, where's the pendulum swing where it's people just get, contractors today get fed up and say, I can't do this anymore because it's just too taxing physically, mentally, spiritually, financially. And then what are we stuck with? We're stuck with a robotic society. I don't know.
If you really want to figure out how to get more people into construction, you have to be truthful with yourself and figure out how many people are leaving construction.
Yep.
And then the reasons why they're leaving. And top of the list is this. This is the reason why. I am not being allowed to advance in my construction career. You know, I want to try to do this. The moment you become a bigger mouse, you get pushed down by big players.
Yep.
So if your ambition is to become a bigger player in this industry, you are going to get pushed down. And that could be a variety of ways that they do it. If you want to just punch the clock and just be that contractor, that tradesperson, then that's a different story. You're working for a machine that wants you just to provide a service. And there's lots of people in construction that do that. They give their Monday to Friday, they give their hours, and they run the cables, and they hang on. You know, they install so many receptacles, switches, and they just love it. It's just like, I don't have to think about shit. This is it. I come in and I do my job and I get paid a decent amount and I go home and I'm done. Done. Seriously. And there's a large portion of the population that does that.
Yep.
But the most people that I know in construction, they have the ambitions to grow, to build. They want to turn around and say, I built that. I was a part of that. Like, they want to be proud of it. And then they want to hand that off to, I think a lot of people in construction now are going to have an extremely hard time convincing their own children to get into construction.
Sure.
Because of all the hardships that they're going through right now, they're going to be like, I do not want my kid to go through any of this shit, because it ain't going to get better anytime soon. Our wage is not allowed to increase in line with cost of living wage. We can't. We're being forced not to. And you'll get a lot of construction self-help people saying, just demand your price, demand that you should be paid this. And I'm like, what's going to happen is that one out of every 10 or one out of every 20 jobs, you're not going to get them now anymore. That's just what's going to happen, is you're going to get more rejections than you were. But the alternative is that you give up your price and you do the job. But you can't continue giving up your price to the point where you're not making money. If you're just breaking even, then there's no point in doing the job.
No.
They're already interested in only hiring the person who's going to give them the job for the price that they want.
Yeah, and so that strikes triggers too. Like, sometimes I think, well, so then how do you create an experience, right? Because human beings will pay for the experience, right? To a certain, think of a restaurant. You go to a restaurant and if the experience is there, you go back and you go back and you go back.
See, I don't eat out much these days because I am so conscious of the value for the dollar being spent.
Sure.
I can't justify a slice of pizza at some hipster pizza place that's like $10.
Yeah, or more, yeah.
For a slice of fucking pizza. Or if you want to get a whole pie and it's like $30. And I'm like looking at it going, that's just insane. Like, I don't understand that. I think I've shared on a few shows back where the price of beef patties went up to $3.50. And I was like, when the fuck did a beef patty become $3.50? So they're just increasing the price. So I start looking at, you start looking at the value associated with that. And I can't justify it. So I'm like, no, I'm not interested in that.
Yeah.
So I won't go and I won't contribute. But everybody else is either ignoring it or just completely blind to it. Because there's lineups.
Or just going in debt. Like, this is the other thing is like, holy shit, we're supposed to be living in a economic downturn yet.
But that's also a big mistake for a lot of young construction companies. They just keep on getting more and more borrowed money. I told everybody, the biggest mistake you can make during the COVID years was to start leasing those new vehicles. Every manufacturer was loving it. They were leasing out these vehicles at these insane interest rates. They were locking these contractors in for 5-year leases. And I was like, guys, these are huge mistakes. And they did it. And then all of a sudden we're in the economy right now and those leases are still going on. So they're still paying those fees. Lots of them also opened up shop and they're like, I want an office. I want an experience. I want my clients to come in and see this office environment. I want a front desk. I want an assistant at the front. Huge mistakes.
Yeah.
Right now they're all struggling, if not closing up shops. They don't want that experience anymore for the clients, right? Because they can't afford it. They're like downsizing. But the big players are not doing that. They're still maintaining their perception. For them, it's like the economy's totally fine. Everything's fine. Because they have their contracts.
Yeah, but they're squeezing people inside, which is terrible as well, right?
Yeah.
And optically on the outside, yeah, you know, we care. We bullshit.
CBC is the biggest joke, and I certainly hope that the new government comes in and turns that structure on Front Street into a condo. And I doubt it. I guarantee you I doubt it that it won't. It's going to still stay put there. And CBC in the last 10 years has had only 2 years with a profit. Not dramatic. The majority of them have been losses. And it's all government funded, so it's our dollars funding that. So I don't understand how you've got a corporation that has had 8 of the last 10 years in as high as 150 million losses.
Wow.
Yet still handing out $15 million bonuses to executives. Apply that to your business, Jonathan. So we're all in a downturn. We're all struggling. I've got to sell this vehicle. I got to sell this office space. I got to get rid of all this other shit. But by the way, I'm going to give you a nice raise of $250K for this year for a bonus because you did really well. That makes no sense. But that's exactly what's going on because that's printed fake money.
Right.
Right? It's debt on our doorstep. And nobody's like questioning it. I don't understand this. How can you? We can't keep on paying for things that we don't need or should be buying. We can't. Simple as that. I know, it's scary times. Everyone's freaking out. I'm not trying to be a dick about it. But yeah, if you're getting into construction, the best thing you can do is understand the landscape and figure out exactly how to navigate it.
I think that's the best advice and being transparent. Like, listen, folks, here's what you're in for. Never mind what you think you thought. Here's a different perspective to be aware of.
Everyone always just wants to talk about the positive. Politicians will always talk about how many people are getting into construction. Politicians will always give money out to people who can prove that they can bring in a small percentage of the population into construction. They always talk about all these new projects that they want to get started. But nobody's ever talking about the over budget projects, the extra expenses, LRT, $4 billion. Why is this not a huge red flag? Like, everybody associated with that should be fired and fined. No, they're not being fined. They're being compensated. So it's like you can't have, the government doesn't have a successful track record.
Right.
But yet they're constantly being given money to do more of these projects that have no successful track record. You can't run a business that way. You built this house. It failed, but yet you were given more money to build another house. That makes no sense. So it should be applicable to the government as well. So you should only build what you can prove that you can build on time, under budget. But that doesn't work that way. So how do you change this whole city and the landscape? You got to wipe out everybody that's running this ship. But then you can't do that because they won't allow you to do it. So I don't know. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that's it. We just talked. I just wanted to bring this up. We wanted to just talk about this shit. Oh, I didn't even talk about. Yeah, we talked about that. Somebody needs to start a blue collar party. And then, yeah, we're going to have that show. I want to talk to those guys and we'll probably discuss how to start a construction company, a big construction company.
Sure.
I want to like implement certain things, but I was also very honest with them too. I said, guys, you're either going to have to make the decision to do things slightly bent. You have to make that decision. And they were shocked that I was telling them that. And I was like, guys, I don't know how, because they were telling me they can't get the contracts. They're applying, they're submitting, they're trying to get accreditations, they're trying to get everything all lined up to make themselves appear proper. And I was like, guys, has nothing to do with getting that job.
Those are all nice to haves.
Nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
The ones that you're competing against don't even care about that shit. You're going to have to decide if you want to bend to get that job, simple as that. And then after you even do that and you do get on that job, guess what? You're on their radar now, because now you're trying to get into the sandbox, and then you're going to have a conversation with somebody, some stranger. That's what's going to happen. And now you're going to have to decide, how do I handle this conversation? That's the world that you're entering. Scary. I think it's totally scary.
And I think that human beings, before we get into that, need to know who they are. Like, who are you as a human being? How far do you want to go? You know, what reputation do you want to withhold? Because that's your reputation's all you got. And that goes with you for the rest of your life. And at the end of life, what do you want the people to say in your obituary? How are you as a human being? When you start with yourself there, then you'll have the answers, how far you're willing to bend. And if you're not, you're not. And if you are, where's your tolerance? Because if there is no tolerance, holy shit. Holy shit.
I think the majority of people become the villain. I'm sorry to say, but they do. They become the villain. Because you'll make the money that you really want to make if you become the villain.
Yep.
Always a pleasure, Jonathan, to have you on the show.
Thanks, Manny.
Talking a bunch of stuff. I know that we got some TNTs coming up. There's other stuff that we're working on as well, too. All kinds of stuff. So
I'm excited.
That's it. We're out of here.